forever. Dog.
Comic books, comic time. Writers and artists are on the line. They make a splash as a comic's read and take us on a trip behind the spread. Watch out for comic book commentary. Spinning a winning inside fix, how they got a hot idea. Narrative, character, visual tricks, and bam, onomatopoeia. Uh-huh. It's comic book commentary.
Hi, I'm Natalie Norigat. Welcome to Comic Book Commentary. Today, I'm going to be doing the commentary for my new book called I Moved to Los Angeles to Work in Animation. A lot of people ask me what this book is about. Unlike the title, it's about how I moved to Los Angeles to work in animation about 3 years ago. I was a comic book artist up in Portland for many years, working at Helioscope Studio. And I got my dream job down here, storyboarding for an animation studio, and decided to pack up and head down I-5, drive for 2 days straight, and move all my earthly possessions down here and just try to make a go of it. And I had a pretty hard time, breaking in LA and transplanting myself. And after about a year down here, I had all of these journal entries about what the trip had been like and, you know, trying to learn how to storyboard in a studio and make friends down here, get used to the LA culture. And I thought maybe there's some material here for a story. And if I could make it easier for anybody coming after me, I'd really like to. So that's where this book started. Yeah, I'd been here for about a year, and I started trying to put those journal entries and those thoughts into a cohesive story. And it took a long time, probably like 6 months, to get the story in shape. I showed it to a ton of people to ask for help and make sure that it was reflecting other people's experiences and not just my own. So I wasn't saying stuff that was totally wrong, making generalizations about working in animation. And a bunch of friends helped me out, proofread this, and got it to the state that it's in today. I also have to thank my amazing editor at Boom, Shannon Waters, who saw this book when it was just about done and had some great ideas for how to make it better. And also Kara Leopard. I haven't met her. I hope that's how her last name is pronounced. But with book design, she did an incredible job on this. So I wrote this, I illustrated it, I colored it, and I lettered it. And I tried to go for a really fast, efficient style because I wanted to get this story out the door. Honestly, I wanted to make it while it was all fresh in my mind. And so it took maybe 6 months to write and 6 months to draw. I think that's about right. So I really spent more time on the story than I normally do and less time on the art than I normally do. Okay, here we go. So the first page is a disclaimer because I am making a lot of generalizations in this book, and I just want to make sure people know I encourage you to check lots of sources when you are deciding on a big life move, like coming to LA or applying to studios. Talk to as many people as possible and get as broad an input as you possibly can. This is just one person's experience. But I do think it's worth putting out there because it can be so hard to find information on animation jobs, which is surprising because a lot of people are working in the industry. A lot of people are interested in the industry. It's just like once you're in, most people don't share what the day-to-day is like or what the salaries are like or the culture. So I just wanted to put my little story out there into the world. So hopefully it's easier for the next person. So I give some context. I have an introduction chapter up at the front, and I talk about, where the studios are in the U.S. A lot of them are in L.A. The Animation Guild is in L.A. I talk about, you know, growing up in Portland, thinking that art was a nice hobby, but would never make me any money. So I went to a state school. I got a major in business and Japanese. And after school, I was pleasantly surprised to find that I could make a living as a freelance artist. So I went back to Portland. I worked at Helioscope Studio with a bunch of cartoonists, and they taught me how to have a successful freelance career, which I did for many years until Portland rents started climbing up. And it really sucked. I couldn't afford to live in my hometown anymore as a cartoonist. So I started thinking about, okay, oh, what's my next move here? And I knew several cartoonists in Portland who made the move down to LA around like 2012 to 2014. My friend Angie Wang, Sarah Alexic, were going down there, and they had been cartoonists that I knew. So I thought, oh, wow, is that a possibility for me? And I started looking into it. I was kind of nervous about going to LA. I had like all of these fears about, you know, what might happen down there. We're very shady about LA and Portland, so you hear all kinds of bad things about it. And I decided to take a trip and visit my friend Madeline Flores, who had also moved down here and started working at DreamWorks TV. And she was awesome. She put me up for a few days. She showed me a couple studios, introduced me to a bunch of people, and like showed me around the neighborhood. And I was like, oh, her life is great. I could picture myself here. I want to do what Maddie's doing. So that was when I decided, all right, we're going to try and do this. But deciding that that would be a nice thing to do, deciding that I wanted to work in animation, it was not as easy as breaking in. There was still a lot to do after that. So then we go into this chapter, getting a job, which is me on a desert island waving my hands, and I've spelled out, hire me, on the beach in rocks, which is how it feels when you didn't go to an art school and you're 27 and nobody's answering your job applications. Yeah, I think this is the, like the most quoted part of the book so far. People seem to like these panels where it's like 2009, I'm thinking to myself, is this because I don't go to an art school? And 2011, all of these jobs require experience. In 2013, am I too old now? It's, oh my God. I thought maybe this was a pipe dream. And I was kidding myself, trying to go for it. But yeah, I stuck with it. I spent about a year job searching, and I just like treated it like it was my second job. I'd wake up every morning, look at the job boards from back in Portland, and if anything relevant came up, like a story position, character designer, background artist, 2D animator, I don't know who I'm kidding, but I tried to 2D animate, I would apply to those as quickly as possible. And I was working on my portfolio. I was taking classes. There's like the Northwest Film School up in Portland, and I took a storyboarding seminar there. And there's a lot of resources online. So I was trying to find places where I could learn for free online. While I was waiting to break in. Yeah, so it goes through me being disappointed, rejected again, and hearing like from a friend that it can take up to 30 story tests to break into a studio. And I was just thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I can't do 30 story tests. They are not paid and they take like 2 weeks to do. And that's great practice, but it's really tough on top of trying to stay afloat with a freelance career. But luckily, after a while, I did get my first job. It was like a training position. It wasn't a full storyboard artist position. It was like a training position. But that was awesome for me because it actually meant the stakes were lower and I had a chance to make mistakes and learn on the job. Yay! So I've got these panels where I take the call, the fateful call that says, you got the job, and I'm in the shower. I'm pretending I'm not in the shower because I was so scared if I didn't answer it right when they called, then maybe I'd miss the chance. So I'm like dripping wet, trying not to slip and die in the bathroom, being like, oh, thank you. Yay, that's so great. And then doing a little happy dance. And I had to edit out my boobies and my little bush from the drawing for the more G-rated audience. And I was very sad about that. I liked some of the nudity in this book, and now it's gone. It makes me sad. The next chapter is called Moving. So it's all about moving from Portland to LA. The house hunt, driving down LA, just crying my eyes out. I was like really missing my boyfriend and singing to French songs and feeling like, oh, this is a terrible decision. I've already committed. I have to try it. So got down there and I stayed with my buddy, Jamie Rich, who's been mentioned on the podcast before. He's an awesome, I don't know, what is he, president of DC? He's something important. And he's a good friend from back in Portland. We did a book called A Boy and a Girl Together at Oni Press. So he put me up for my first 3 weeks while I was just getting on my feet down here and house hunting. And it took a long time to find an apartment. I was really shocked by the prices down here and the quality, but eventually found like a okay apartment for like $1,500 a month. My last apartment in Portland was $500. And it was right next to the ocean, which I like to brag about, the ocean being an auto repair shop in the alley right next to us. So we woke up to the sounds of metal every morning. That was nice. But yeah, it was a fine place to get started. I talk a bit about the different neighborhoods, where the studios are, and where a lot of people in animation like to live. I've been in North Hollywood and Burbank. I've got friends all over. Some people live way far away. If they want more space or lower rents, or they've got kids and, you know, they're moving for the school district, some people drive like 90 minutes to get here in the morning. But most of the people I know live in the Valley. So Glendale, Burbank, yeah, Studio City. The next chapter is called Perks of Working in Animation Guild Studios. And so this was kind of funny about starting to work in animation. I didn't know anything about the guild, and I never thought I would work for a union job. You know, like as an artist, you think you're kind of on your own forever. You're just like a freelance cowboy and good luck. Like nobody's looking out for you. But animation's been around for a while and unionized in the 40s. So there are all of these rights that people who came before us have fought for and gained for us that we get to benefit from. There's, you know, maximum hours per day you are allowed to work, maximum hours per week before your employer legally has to give you overtime or golden time, where your rates jump up quite a bit. So it keeps the conditions really good at the studios for the most part, at least in my experience. Yeah, I talk about getting healthcare through the guild. That was amazing. Having this minimum wage that was so much higher than what I was used to. You know, like when I used to do commercial storyboarding, it would be like $50 an hour. And I don't know, I might get like 10 hours a week, which felt good. I could live off of that. But yeah, here it's like 45 hours a week guaranteed. And my starting rate was around $30 an hour. So that added up. It was really nice. Yeah, I talk a bit about some of the perks you can find at studios beyond the minimum. Like a lot of the animation studios here try to cater to artists, and especially young artists coming out of school. They'll be like, hey, do you want to come play at our studio? We've got foosball. Oh, yeah, we've got a pool. Oh, we've got free candy. We've got ice cream on Thursdays. So it's that thing a lot of companies are trying to do now, where they just throw in a ton of perks. But there's some fun ones in animation. I really like where I work now. There's gyms and like athletic classes for free and life drawing like two or three times a week, which is amazing because I didn't go to art school. I have a lot to catch up on. The next chapter is called A Day in the Life. And this is one of the questions I get the most when I'm, you know, talking about working in animation. People are like, oh, okay, but I can't picture it. Walk me through a normal day. So a normal day is, it's an office job. I work like 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. I take an hour for lunch, and nobody's really like watching me with a microscope, which is nice. So I can kind of come and go as I please. The most important things are just hitting my deadlines, answering emails, and yeah, going to meetings that I'm supposed to. I work in an office. I've got a laptop and a Cintiq. I've got great coworkers, and most days I am just sitting and drawing all day. Very fun. That's what I like to do. The next chapter is called Best Things About Living in LA. So the weather, amazing. It never gets old. I've been here about 3.5 years, and every morning, because I grew up in Portland, you know, you wake up and it's raining. It's probably raining. And here you wake up and the sun is coming through the blinds and your room is like already warm, and you look out and it's just beautiful. Sunrise and sunset are colorful every day. You've got the beach and the desert, beautiful plants that grow here. It smells like flowers in the spring. They're just everywhere. People can grow oranges in their yard, and it's amazing. It's paradise. There's also a ton of stuff going on here. So I talk about, like, I can't even possibly do and see all of the things that interest me in LA. There's so much. My first year here, I tried to do something new every weekend just to make sure I was getting out of the house. And even if it was scary, even if I didn't have friends, just trying something new every week, which really helped me to discover the city and break in. But oh my gosh, I've been here 3.5 years and I've just scratched the surface. There's so much. Yeah. So yeah, LA, whatever you've heard about it, give it a try. So the next chapter is called A Few Things to Keep in Mind. This is me hanging onto a palm tree in a hurricane, because there are some things that I would have liked to know before I started working in animation and moved to LA. I talk about, you know, some of the financial problems, like how expensive renting an apartment is. I could have done something a bit cheaper. Like, there was an option to sublet a room in a big house for more like $800 a month. That's not impossible. But yeah, to live near the studio and have an apartment to yourself is probably like $1,500 a month. And yeah, you need a car. The sidewalks and the streets are not super well maintained. The culture is kind of weird. Like, there's beauty industry advertisements everywhere. There's a lot of pressure to look a certain way. I think a lot of people here are, you know, interested in acting or performing, and there's definitely a market advertising to them about, let us fix your teeth, let us fix your boobs, let us fix your face, whatever. And it's weird to see that all the time. There's also like a huge disparity between rich and poor, which, I mean, yeah, that exists everywhere. But here it's like you see really, really, really rich people and really, really, really poor people. I also miss nature, hiking, getting my exercise just by living my life and walking, taking public transportation. I don't do that here. And I tried when I started. I would try to walk places just stubbornly, like, it's not the culture here, but I'm going to make it work. And I'd get stuck on roads where it was dangerous to try and walk where the sidewalk ended. It just ends. There's nowhere to cross the street. You have to turn around and go back a mile and change your plan. It's not good. Also, I didn't really realize this, but for storyboarding, I thought it was kind of all the same. You storyboard for animation, but there's a real division between storyboarding for feature films and storyboarding for TV. And you feel it in the way that the contracts are designed, the way that the work happens, like your schedules are totally different and the culture can be totally different, because people in feature tend to circulate from feature job to feature job. So they all meet each other, and TV people do the same. They kind of get to know each other through TV jobs, and there's not a ton of crossover. So that sucks. I love my friends in TV, and I don't see them as often as I'd like to, but both are cool. Both are good gigs. Yeah, so I talk a bit about boarding for TV, boarding for feature, and then, yeah, how many hours you might be expected to work. And spoiler alert, it's a lot. When we're crunching, I might work like 65 hours a week, which is great money. And if you're working for a good studio, they won't let you ghost hours. They'll make you count every hour that you're working because the guild requires them to. They should be really on top of that and really honest about that. So I don't mind overtime at all. I want to own a house someday. So I'm like, yes, I will work Saturday. Thank you. I talk a bit about, yeah, social life in LA. There are artists everywhere. You can't throw a stick without hitting one. But it was weird. It was like they didn't hang out the way that I was used to in Portland. There wasn't like a house party every week, or at least not that I was invited to. And people don't just kind of meet up last minute at a bar. It's really a lot more unusual here for me to see people outside of work. And I have a hard time convincing them to come out after work and get a beer, because for a lot of them, it means driving 20 minutes to see me. If you are moving to LA and you're nervous about that, just pick your favorite friend and rent the apartment downstairs from them. Honest recommendation. It'll be a lot easier to see them. My favorite page is this spread at the end of the chapter, A Few Things to Keep in Mind. It's like that feeling of being alone on Friday night in a new city and being like, I don't have plans. I want to go out. I want to explore. I want to see people, but I don't have plans. My apartment is not nice enough to invite people over. And I'm trying to save money, so maybe I should just stay in. Oh God, I'm so alone. And then the next page is me and one of my friends who also made the move down here, telling me, hey, it's okay. LA sucks. It's okay to say it. So the next chapter is how to break in. And yeah, after the what's a day in the life like, this is definitely the question that I get the most. I want to work in animation. How do I break in? So I try to break down just like, you know, everybody's different and this advice won't work for everybody, but I try to break down the things that I think will work for the most people, my general advice. And that's, remember that a lot of it is luck and timing. So just keep applying. It's like throw your name in the hat over and over and over again. Any job that interests you, big studio, small studio, long shot, easy layup, whatever, throw your name in, because it can take a while and you just want to give yourself the best chance. So don't count yourself out of the race. Always put your name in there if you're interested. Don't take it personally if you get rejected. It happens to all of us. And again, it's a numbers game. They might have, I've heard crazy numbers. I've heard like 1,000 applicants for 3 jobs that were posted. So do not take it personally. You might be totally qualified for that job. You might have gotten it on a different day. So just find the next listing and apply to that. Also, yeah, if they say we want somebody with 5 years of experience and you have 4, apply. If they say we want somebody 5 years out of school and you're 6 years out of school, apply. They're describing the perfect candidate that they want all of these traits, but they'll take the best one that they get. So you might be the best one that they get. Put your name in there. Yeah, so I talk about where my big breaks came from. And for me, it was definitely friends. Maddie bringing me down here, showing me her life. And she got me my first boarding gig on Bee and Puppycat, doing a freelance episode with her. That was like the first thing that I was able to put on my resume. And that really changed the amount of responses that I was getting. Also, just storyboarding, like coming up with my own short story ideas and boarding them. It's crazy. Like, you don't need permission to make storyboard samples, but a lot of people feel like they can't do it on their own, and you totally can. If you draw, if you sketch, if you make comics, you know all the basic skills already. So just like write a short story, draw a bunch of frames, and start boarding and see where it takes you. Put it online, get reactions to it, you know, filter them and listen to the ones that you care about and keep doing it. I made a little animated short for Loop de Loop, which was so fun. I totally recommend it if you can. That introduced me to a lot of people. I joined ASIFA in Portland, which is great for in-person networking. You know, there's something different than like talking to people on Twitter and meeting up and sketching together with people face to face. You just, there's a different quality to those interactions, and you can kind of learn things that you weren't even looking for just by taking a chance like that. And the last thing that helped me break in was LinkedIn? Question mark? It was the first time that website has ever been useful for me, but I will take it because that's how I got my dream job. Thank you, LinkedIn. So the next page is about going to Comic-Con in 2013, and it's just speaking to that same point, like ASIFA, about if you can. I know it's not fair. I know not everybody can do this, and there's all kinds of reasons why, but if you can go out in person and meet people, it does make a difference. And I know that's not fair, but to whatever extent you can, try to go out to events, try to travel to places where you're going to meet other artists, people who can hire you, just people who are doing what you're interested in, or other students, because that can really speed things up. I talk a bit about how you can use your network without abusing people. So, like, it's tough when you are, when you're young and you need a job, you need money, and someone is a recruiter for a studio, like, how are you not supposed to come across as desperate with them? But try, try to play it cool, try to just, you know, state your case and then leave them alone. Business cards are great. You know, go up to somebody and be like, hey, this is my name. I do this. Here's my business card. It's nice to meet you. Yeah, it's really tough when people are, you know, giving you the hard sell. It's like nobody hands out jobs on the spot. Just like plant the seed, walk away, plant the seed later. Then I talk about some stuff that you can put in your portfolio if you're interested in storyboarding specifically. And then the biggest chapter of the book is called Other Frequently Asked Questions. And here I talk about all of the little questions that people ask me. So I've been collecting them since I got the job and moved down here. You know, I took them on Tumblr, Instagram, Twitter, email, and just kind of like made a list of the ones that I get the most often. And it's like, where can I meet people? Do I have to draw in a studio's house style? What software do you use? All of these questions, I try and answer as many of them as possible, as clearly as possible. And just like overall, I would just say it's going to be fine. If you don't know everything, it's okay. You can learn it on the job. It's just like, it's really about luck and not giving up, whether or not you break in. I do believe that. Yeah. Oh, there's some more boobies I had to edit out. It made me sad. I drew... For the figure drawing classes, I drew like full on nudity, and then when we put it out to the wider book market, Shannon was like, could you just turn them around? I'm sorry. It's like, oh, okay. Just draw a little subtle butt. Let's see. Yeah. So more FAQ. Can I keep working on my own projects, for example, when you're storyboarding? I have found that so far. I hope I'm going to continue to be allowed to do that. I love storyboarding. It's like so fulfilling to work on a group project that's going to reach a really wide audience and have so many artists work on it and be so finished at the end. But I come home and I like to work on something that I own too, that I control and write. And comics has really filled that void for me. So I love doing both at once. I did this book during my second year as a storyboard artist. And during my first year, I was drawing a graphic novel for a French company called Les Cuisines de l'Histoire, which was about cooking in the Middle Ages with Isabelle Bottien. Very fun. So yeah, I love to make comics when I come home and keep working on things that belong to me, because the other thing about animation is we don't get royalties. We don't own anything. We're artists for hire. So I think it's a good idea to, you know, if you can, and if that's your passion, to keep building something on the side that belongs to you that might take off. It's like when I make a graphic novel, it's like buying a lottery ticket. Probably it's not going to go anywhere, but you never know. And it's fulfilling in the meantime, so it's fine. Oh, I talk about, so I get this question, like, is animation a straight boys white club? And give a very roundabout answer, which is basically like, if you are not straight, if you're not white, if you're not cis, if you're not a man, please apply. Your voice is needed in the room. And I think most people in the studios are on board with that. But yeah, just like, if you don't see media that's reflecting you or the things that you believe, please apply. Like, you are necessary, you are needed. And yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with that. I think a lot of people are on the same page. I talk a bit about salary, vacation time, dress code. There is none. Wear whatever you want. It's great. Culture. Story artists are super collaborative. I love this about my job. Because our art is not really finished most of the time, it's never seen outside of the studio, and people edit it for each other. Like, one storyboard sequence might have like five artists touching it over the course of its life. That kind of means that we're self-selecting to not be people with huge egos or people who are very, very precious with our art. So it just kind of lends itself to this nice community in the studios where we help each other, we teach each other, and we are not upset when somebody goes in and like redoes one of our boards. Not too upset. I don't know. I love to control a scene from start to finish, but if someone else gets in there and makes it better, it's better for all of us. It's better for the movie. I talk about age not really mattering. You know, there's definitely this feeling. I absolutely felt this when I was trying to break in, that like, oh my God, hundreds of 22-year-olds just graduated from CalArts with the exact right degree, and they know lots of people in the industry. I'm never going to break in. Oh my God, like, it's over. My life's over. But I broke in when I was almost 28, and I am not the oldest person to break in. If you are the best person for the job, I don't think they care what your age is. So just keep going. I talk about my friends moving around jobs a lot, especially in TV animation. Nobody told me how often they are searching for jobs and getting, you know, what's the word? getting like swooped up by other studios. So I like this. I can't put brands in here, but I had them jumping from Eamworks TV to Nickelodeon to Cartoon, our favorite animation studios. Talk a bit about the hardest thing from transferring from comics to animation. And for me, that was the art style. So I used to draw my comics in pencil, then I'd draw them again in a tighter pencil, then I'd ink them, and then I would fix them up in Photoshop and make them very clean. In storyboarding, there's often not time for that, and it's not even the style anybody's going for. It's fine to be sketchy. You can leave the, you know, like the cross lines in the face, construction lines, it's totally fine. So it took me a long time to loosen up and just let go in that way. But I think this comic, I'm really proud of this because this is so loose. And to me, that's actually good progress. So to somebody else, this might look like a very fast style, very low details. But I'm proud of that. I'm glad that I've been able to let go and draw faster, just get the idea across and move on. I like that about storyboarding. Everybody in, yeah, most of the people that I meet in animation are nice. I talk about whether or not there's upward mobility for story artists, and there is. So I didn't know this before I got here, but a lot of story artists are able to move up later if they want to be heads of story or directors or pitch their own shows. Once they are in studios and they're meeting people, it becomes easier. So if you can get a foot in the door, even as like a PA, you just end up meeting people in all the different departments, and you can ask those questions, kind of figure out what you need to get to the job that you want. But story is a great job, and there's a lot of people I know who are not interested in becoming a head of story or director or pitching their own show. They love what they do. And it's a job where you get to pitch story ideas, you get to draw every day, so they don't want to change that. As you move up, like head of story or director, a lot of the time you're actually drawing less. So I don't know, if you love meetings, maybe that's okay, but also it's fine if you don't. It's whatever you want. There's no wrong answer. I talk about traffic. Of course, I have to talk about traffic in an LA book. I'm becoming a very aggressive driver. It's a problem, but you just have to survive here. So I tailgate, and I'm not proud of that. I'm going to have trouble if I ever have to move somewhere else. I talk about the scariest thing that happened when I was visiting Maddie, which was this guy ran across 8 lanes of traffic on I-5 in the middle of the night. We were going to downtown, and our driver just started going like, oh shit. And we all were looking like, what's happening? And then we saw this guy jumps the divide between oncoming traffic and us and just start booking it for the other side of the highway. And he lived, he's fine, but he caused several crashes like right around us. And that was when I was visiting LA for the first time. So I was like, okay, this is what driving in LA is like. Okay, I will have to learn how to dodge people. And luckily that has not happened again since, but really, really shook me up. Yeah, I talk about where you can get nature time if you're like me and you need that. And it can be hard, like definitely the valley, but a lot of parts of LA are kind of brown. Concrete, barbed wire fences, broken sidewalks. It's not what I'm used to. And it took a long time to appreciate LA. Like it is beautiful. It's just beautiful in a different way. But if you're like me and you grew up somewhere kind of green, or you just really, really want time in nature, there are places that you can go. I like to go to Palisades Park or Griffith Park if I can't really take a big day trip out of the city. I'll also go to gardens like Descanso Gardens, Huntington Gardens, the Los Angeles Botanical Gardens. Very, very pretty. And there's nice hiking, like up in the, what is it, the Angeles Forest, like Switzer Falls. Also going up to Vasquez Rocks, which is deserty but beautiful. I love Joshua Tree, Yosemite National Park, and those are within driving distance if you want, you know, a nice weekend getaway. That can be nice. So the last chapter is called Conclusion, and it's basically like, are you glad that you did this? And the answer is yes. It's more financial stability than I've ever had in my life, than I was even hoping for as an artist. I get to learn from the people all around me who are really nice, really talented, know all kinds of things that I didn't. And I've found that I'm most happy when I'm learning. So whatever it is, as long as there are people around me that can teach me, like I feel like a little fish in a big pond. I like that a lot. My parents get to say that I have a real job now when they go to dinner parties. It's like, oh yeah, she works for a company now. And yeah, it was hard coming here though. And I talk a bit about that. Like, I went to therapy for the first time. I was super depressed about a year and a half in. Like I thought everything was fine, but about a year and a half in, it was just like, I can't do this. And yeah, like went and saw somebody, that helped a lot. Talked to a lot of people who've been in LA for a while. And one piece of advice I got that I really liked was from Hope Larson. She said, the first year sucks, but it's not representative of how your life will be here if you stay, which I thought was really nice. And that's turned out to be true for me. The longer that I'm here, the more that I love it. Anywhere that's new, like, you don't know what's good yet, and it can take a long time to find your favorite sushi restaurant and the beach that's not super crowded and, you know, where you can buy clothes that you can afford. But once you do, it starts to feel more and more like home. So I end the book with 9-panel grids about my favorite things to do in LA, and I loved doing this. It was like a gratitude exercise, so I made a list of, like, what are the highlights from, you know, the first year here when I was writing the book, like the first year. So we've got seeing the sunset at Getty Center, going on a hike in Malibu and seeing a baby seal, discovering UCB and all of the amazing shows you can watch there, watching skaters at the Venice Skate Park, taking the train to San Diego, all this stuff for pages and pages. And then I end it with the Vasquez Rocks, the first time that I went there with my fiance, Boulay. We were trying to get out of the city, and we had heard that Vasquez Rocks was a great place for seeing nature and, you know, rejuvenating yourself in that way. We get out there, we get out of the car, we walk through the Welcome Center and out into the park, kind of stop and look around. And I'm like, Gilles, it's brown. It's just brown. This is where people told me to go when I said that I needed nature. This is the best that LA has got. This is ugly. And we decided to stick it out. We kept hiking. Gilles is a much better sport than I am. And about an hour later, I noticed on the horizon that the mountains looked kind of blue by comparison to all of the brown with the atmospheric perspective. They were like, oh, maybe that's a little bit blue. That's kind of nice. And then an hour later, I was like, oh, the plants here are green. Then the mountains in the distance are purple and the rocks kind of red. That's pretty. And by the end of the day, we ended up staying all day as the sun was setting. It just, the sky lit on fire. All the colors came out. It felt like it just took a while for our eyes to adjust to see how beautiful it was. And I feel like that's been my experience of LA so far. Okay, so I said that was the end, but here's the thing. When I showed this book to my editor, Shannon Waters, she had this great idea. She was like, what if you added a new chapter at the back and you interviewed other people? Because I like this book, Tally, good job. But the one thing is, it's just your opinion and your experience. And I think you could add a lot of value by fleshing that out with other people's experience. And she was 100% right. I love this chapter. I'm so happy with how it turned out. So we interviewed, I think, 7-8 people from my life. Most of them are old friends. So it starts with Angie Wang. And we used to be in a sketch group together up in Portland. It was Angie, Emmy Lennox, and me. And if you read Emmy Town or Between Gears, we all, you know, make appearances in those. And yeah, I'm so proud of her. She's a prop designer on Steven Universe now, and I'm such a fan of her work. It was really fun to sit down with her and talk about her take on LA. The next interview is with Antoine Attori, who's a friend of mine from Disney. Antoine is French, and he talks about making the move much further than I did, all the way from Paris to LA and moving his family out here, which was a big thing. Antoine is now back in France, and he's working on a comic series called Perseus, which just came out from Delcourt in January. So check that out. Next is Dave Pimentel, also a friend from Disney. He's co-directing Darkmouth at Alcon Entertainment right now. And he's one of the more established people that I interviewed. It was really cool to talk to someone who was a story artist, had been an animator, then a story artist, and is now, he had been head of story, and now he's a director. So he really had a scope of experience that I appreciated getting into this book. Next is Diana Ha. She's a friend from Portland. Love her. And if you don't follow her on Twitter and you're interested in an art career, you really should, because Diana does not pull punches. She says the most true things about standing up for yourself as an artist that no one else is saying. And she is a board artist on She-Ra. So she talks a lot about coming to LA and being that tiny artist that needs help to find your footing and survive in this new climate, and how those of us who've been here for a while, we have a responsibility to look out for other people as well. It's not about just getting yourself through the door, right? It's like holding the door open for the people after you. Next is an interview with Drew Green, who's a story artist on Craig of the Creek. And Drew's an internet friend. I actually have still not met him, but we did this interview over email. And it was really cool to get Drew's point of view, because he's the only person I interviewed who didn't go to college. And he was talking about how everything that he needs to know, he learned from high school. He networked on his own. He went to conventions and he got into the industry. And I think it's really awesome. Next interview is with Kelly Perdue, storyboard artist on Infinity Train. Kelly's a friend I met here in LA, super talented. And she talks about kind of like being led on by her first job. And it can be kind of confusing. Like, a lot of places hire you freelance just to test you out, but it can become borderline abusive if it's not like clear if it's going to turn into a job or not. So I'm not sure that that's exactly what the situation was here, but she talks a little bit about, you know, trying to like protect yourself and figure out what it is early, and whether or not art school is worth it. Next up is an interview with Megan Nairn. She comes from Australia, and she talks about moving all the way over here to work for Jib Jab and Cartoon Network. And Megan is one of the founding members of Loop de Loop. She started it up in LA, and it's still running today, which is so cool. So Megan's one of the people that I met when I made a short film for that, and she was one of the first people to give me story tests. It was awesome to catch up with her again after a few years. And the last interview is with Sam Spina, who's a story artist on Infinity Train. And Sam's awesome. He also comes from comics. He had a really interesting story of breaking in because before Sam had storyboarded or anything in animation, he directed a short for Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon. Sorry. Which one was it? I'm reading. Nickelodeon. It was for Nickelodeon. It's called Hole. It's from 2012. It's amazing. Watch it. So Sam had this kind of funny story about, like, he directed his own short before, you know, breaking in as a board artist. So he's seen a lot of different aspects of the industry as well. And I loved that interview as well. And then I ask everybody to end on a positive. So they all give their favorite thing to do in LA if they have a free day. And I love their answers. There's some things in here that I need to try. And that's the end of the book. Thank you so much for listening to my comic book commentary on I Moved to Los Angeles to Work in Animation. I hope that was interesting for you. If you would like to find this book, it is out in stores. It's on Comixology. You can find it on the Boom website. It should be in shops, bookshops, comic shops. Support your local comic shop if you can. But if not, it is also on Amazon. Thank you again to my amazing editor, Shannon Waters, and thank you to Ben Blacker. Thanks for having me, and tune in next week for another comic book commentary. Bye.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.